This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For 60 years, St. Jude doctors and researchers have helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. But we need your help getting that number to 100%. And most important, your support means that families will never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food. Now, that peace of mind means so much. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties.
This is the Bobbycast.
Welcome to the best moments of the Bobbycast 2023, where if you missed the full episode, you got to go listen. They were my favorite moments. And if you're like me, you don't listen to every single episode of a podcast sometimes because life gets in the way. But this is a reminder, and it's the first half of my favorite ones from 2023. Now, I sat down with a lot of awesome people, so it was kind of hard to narrow it down. But these were either my favorites or your favorites, as in the most downloaded streamed episodes, or just the ones that came out going, man, that person is super cool. And since they are the best moments, again, go check out the full hour-long episodes if you're interested. So let's kick it off with one of the coolest interview moments that I had this year. It was Adam Duritz from The Counting Crows. So, like, that's the guy. Like, for me, musically, it's my favorite band, The Counting Crows. Never had spent any time with them. And getting to sit with Adam Duritz was really cool for me personally because I just listened to Counting Crows music so much. Favorite ever. And I got to ask a bunch of questions I'd always wanted to ask, like how Saturday Night Live launched the band's fame, to, you know, getting mobbed before there was social media where people are like, that's the guy from The Counting Crows. So a really cool one for me, maybe my top favorite. But here we go. Adam Duritz from episode 400 here at number 10. So you mentioned Marty Jones. That's Mr. Jones. You guys kind of imagining what fame is like or what celebrity is like. How long did you write that song before that actually happened?
A while. I mean, Mr. Jones is from sort of the middle version of Counting Crows. It's probably about 1990-91. Something like that.
And so did you guys write it like, man, this would be awesome, or this is going to happen? We really can see this happening to us.
No, I mean, Marty's dad, David Serva, is one of the few Americans. He had left America and gone to move to Madrid. And he's one of the few American guitar players to ever make it in this flamenco scene in Spain. He's a brilliant flamenco guitar player. And he had a huge career in Madrid, which is pretty rare. And he came back to America at one point for a visit. And he played some shows with his old flamenco troupe in the city, in the Mission, San Francisco. And so we went to see them one night, and then we all went out drinking afterwards and got pretty wasted. And we ended up in this one bar, the New Amsterdam on Columbus Street. And, you know, we were sitting at the bar, and there's all these really beautiful flamenco dancers, and we're not really getting anywhere with them. And in the corner of the bar, I'm looking over, and Chris Isaak's drummer, Kenny Dale Johnson, is in the corner at this booth with like three girls sitting there with him. And I'm just thinking, man, we got to get our shit together, man. Because, like, if we were rock stars, it would be a lot easier to talk to women. Everything would be better, you know, it would be kind of great. I just thought that was kind of funny, the thought of it, because, like, you know, it's not just because of girls in a corner. You know, you dream about things. Like, if you're going to write songs, you dream about being able to do that with your life and support yourself. And, you know, we're spending this evening with this flamenco troupe, and David Serva, his dad, is like a famous guitar player over in Spain, and Kenny's in the corner, and, you know, it's just what we wanted to do with our lives, plus the girl thing. But it also occurred to me how silly that is. It's like, nothing like that solves all your problems in life. It just doesn't work that way. You know, it may be great for some things, but it's not going to fix who you are. And I got home at night, and I was sort of thinking about, like, how the whole thought process was so funny to me, and I wrote the song.
Was it one of those that fell out?
Like, yeah, pretty much.
Really?
I mean, I don't know, you know.
Well, anything.
Wrote it all that night.
Anything in front of 5 hours, I was almost like falling out.
Yeah, I think most of my songs back then were probably less than 5 hours. I get real determined and just sit there and do it until it's done.
Whenever I think about me in college and those really formative years for me listening to music, I probably listened to more than any other body of music, the Across the Live Wire, you guys' live album. I mean, I could tell you, now my favorite band, Counting Crows. I can do every even spoken part of that. You know, some people have movies, some people, and for mine, it's that. And even at the end, I like to think Dog's Eye View. You know, you're doing the whole, the river, it's so. But I listen to that so much that if you were to say, what's the music you listened to in those formative years that made you musically who you are today? If I ask you that question, what did you listen to so much at 18 to 22 or 23? You're like, yep, that's what reminds me of those years.
I listened to a lot of REM, U2 probably at the time. Still probably listening to a lot of Jackson 5. That's my first record. I don't think I've really stopped listening to that. Roxy Music around then too. Jay Giles Band, P-Funk. I don't know. It's hard to remember it right at that one time. I was thinking of U2 and REM because I specifically remember there's a few things in my mind that are needle drop records where I literally remember when you put the needle on the record and how it started. And I have very clear memories of like being that freshman year in college and listening to Chronic Town, that first REM EP, and War, putting the needle down and hearing Sunday Bloody Sunday. Like, I remember those two really vividly. And I remember going to the Roxy Music concert right around then, that last tour.
You ever see Jackson 5?
Yeah, that's my first concert, too.
Do you remember it? Or were you told a lot about it?
No, vaguely. I was probably about 6. It was a rodeo in Texas. And they played at it. I went one day and saw the Jackson 5. My sister went the next day with my parents and saw Sonny and Cher. I would
the rodeo is still doing that too, by the way. Same kind of deal where it's somebody different and awesome every single day.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have been happy with either one of those, but the Jackson 5, you know, that was, I have vague memories, but I'm sure they're really mixed in with TV clips of the Jackson 5. You know, I'm sure it's not really a memory because it's a long time ago.
Now, if you get famous, there's all the social media that comes at you. And I've had different smaller-ish type events where it's just like, wow. But when you blow up in the 90s and 2000s and fame is not able to get to you through those means, how does fame get to you if you're always on the road moving around? Is it just crowds? Is it just people?
Well, you know, it's weird. We'd been on the road for a while before it happened, really, and it had been building. You know, we played Saturday Night Live in January of 94, and we weren't even in the top 200. I mean, Mr. Jones was kind of a hit on the radio, but it wasn't making any impact anywhere. The record, like I said, it was 214 or something. But we played Saturday Night Live, and it jumped 40 spots a week for 5 weeks. And we ended up in the top, I don't know, 13, then 6, and then 2 for the next 2 years or so. But I didn't really see, you know, we were on the road on our own for a while at Christmas, and we seemed to be a kind of a hot indie band for a little bit. And then we went back to opening for Cracker. And then in April, we went to Europe for our first European tour, and we were gone for the month of April. And we flew back from Europe and landed in New Orleans right before Jazz Fest. And I'd been going to Jazz Fest for years, so I'd spent a lot of time in New Orleans.
As a fan?
Yeah,
watching?
Because we weren't before the band, really. This was my first time at Jazz Fest after the first record was out. And I went to the festival the first day after we got there and got mobbed. And the things that had been building that spring and winter had happened. It had kind of all coalesced while we were in Europe. So I didn't realize it.
Were you surprised by the mobbing?
Yeah. It scared the crap out of me.
It's like when someone waves at you and you wave back and you realize they're somebody behind you they're waving at.
Yeah.
Like you think they're running to them.
Somebody wanted a picture or an autograph or something. And then the crowd just gathered and gathered and gathered and gathered and didn't stop. And then later that night, we played Tipitina's. And, you know, it fits about 800 to 1,000 people in Tipitina's. And there were 2,000 people outside on the neutral ground in the street. They kind of had to close off the street. And we went outside after the show. They had to open. They opened, like, they had these wall doors that slide out, I think. And they opened them up so the crowd outside could hear, too. We went outside to play a couple songs acoustically for them after the show. And it was just massive. And that's when I realized, like, it had happened while we were in Europe. And so whatever buildup there was going to be, we missed it. And it just, we just landed in this thing.
Isn't that crazy?
It was really weird. I mean, that the next, you know, few months were very strange. I remember being on tour and being in Birmingham and having a day off and deciding there was like a movie theater about four blocks from the hotel. And I walked down and I was watching this movie. There's no one in the theater but me. It was weird. It was like an afternoon matinee or something. And this guy comes walking down the aisle and then walks up the row and sits next to me. And I was like, hey.
And the whole empty theater says right next to
And he said, hey, I'm a really big fan. I was like, thanks, man. He said, do you mind if I sit here? I'm like, look, I'm just trying to watch a movie. If you don't mind, I just want to watch a movie, you know. And he got up and left. And about 45 minutes later, saw a guy come down the aisle and come down the road to me again. And I was like, God damn it. But it wasn't the same guy. It was the guy that was working the concession stand out there. And he said, hey, are you in Counting Crows? And I said, yeah. And he goes, listen, I don't know what's going on, but there was some guy in here before. And for the last half hour, he's been on the payphone in the lobby calling people. And there's a huge crowd outside. You know, if you want to get out of here, there's like a door at the bottom, like a alley exit. And I said, yeah, thanks, man. And I snuck out the alley and walked down the street. And then I heard this noise behind me. And I turned around. There's this massive crowd of people out the front of the theater. And they all start running. And I just ran down the street. Got to the hotel, like ahead of this crowd. It was just a little while after Jazz Fest.
You didn't even have the infrastructure to be famous because it all happened while you were gone. You didn't know you landed. It's here, and you didn't have security. You didn't have anything to make sure you were even safe.
No, never really got any of that stuff either. I had a lot of friends in bands who had security. We never really got security out with us or any of that stuff. It just seemed like you could sort of avoid it. Didn't seem to make sense to me walking around with some huge guy next to you. It seemed to invite more attention than anything else. I never really got into that. Even now, at the over the hill age. I don't know. I never really did the security thing. But yeah, I mean, I was just completely unprepared. But the truth is, everybody's unprepared. There's no way to be prepared for that because it's just like everybody starts. It's not like you really do anything. Everybody else just starts acting really weird. And there's no way to prepare for that. It's just like waking up on Mars. You know, you'll get used to the gravity after a while, but it takes a bit.
At number 9, it's Haley Witters from episode 386. Now, to a lot of you, Haley may be a brand new artist, but, you know, her story is pretty legendary and is a 10-year town. She got here, stayed exactly who she is, and the genre kind of came to her. Now, she moved to Nashville from Iowa, and she talks about the grind, how she didn't give up. She talked about getting her first publishing deal, which means you're getting paid to write songs, and how one of the songs she wrote got cut by another artist, but she was so broke, she had to sleep at the airport at the same time. It's Haley Witters. Again, I'm a big fan of her. She's at number 9 here on our best Bobbycast moments. The record that you paid for yourself, which was The Dream,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And when you pay for a record yourself, how do you go about that? Is it a lump sum? How many tracks? Like, walk me through those decisions.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they're hard decisions to make because you don't have enough money to pay for all the tracks that you want to cut.
Right.
So go back to that record and tell me how you made the decisions that you did to put that out.
That was like, you know, some people go and they like cut a record in like a week. That was like a year and a half process for me. So it wasn't like, you know, I just had this giant sum of money and let's go blow it on a record. It was like I was waiting tables. I was still in my first publishing deal, which was with Carnival Music. So I was getting like, you know, my monthly songwriter thing.
But let me tell everybody listening, that ain't no luxury boat.
No. Like, right. You're pinching pennies. Yeah, you know, yeah, like, yeah. First deal, you ain't making money. But, and so I also had my first single as a songwriter kind of during that time, maybe a few years prior. Little Big Town recorded a song I'd written called Happy People.
Was that on the Pharrell project? Or was it?
It was on, it was right after it was the Breaker record.
Got it.
And, you know, again, like that one struggled at radio. Like, I think it was only on there for maybe a few months. So it wasn't like I had.
Before you talk about struggle, though, I want to talk about you getting the single. Like, actually, yeah. When they, because that is not, that's an amazing thing to hear. They're cutting your song.
Yes.
So, and I'm going to get back to the record, but you've sent me down a different hole that I want to go look into where it's, you're writing songs, you have a publishing deal. You write that song, and how do you know when they're interested first?
This was like a total freak, never happened thing that happened to me, where it was like, I went up to Boston. I think this was like year 8, maybe, of me being in town, 7 or 8, something. And, you know, Lori McKenna. It's like, years of building up to try and get in a room with Lori McKenna. And I finally got the green light, and I went up to Boston, and we wrote Happy People. It was the first song we ever wrote. And I was literally sitting in the Boston airport about to, like, fly back to Nashville, just texting my plugger, hey, here's what we wrote, yada, yada. She was like, I'm going to send this to Karen Fairchild. And she, like, texted it to her, emailed whatever. And within, like, an hour, she texted me back, was like, hey, Karen wants to hold this for band.
Same, like, trip? So you're not even home yet.
I'm not even home yet. And I was like, what? Dang. And so, you know, they played it. I guess everyone liked it. Next thing you know, they're cutting it. Next thing you know, it's the first single.
You get that call, they're cutting the song, or do you know afterward?
I knew they were holding it.
But you didn't know they had cut it yet.
I didn't know they were holding it. And you want to know what's so funny about this story, and just to, like, give some perspective, I was still like, you get great news like that. And I was, like, so broke and busted. Like, my flight got canceled. And I literally couldn't afford a hotel in Boston. So I slept in the airport that night.
What?
Isn't that funny?
Juxtaposition. You put those two things beside each other.
What a juxtaposition.
You're like, hey, major artists.
Yes.
They want your song. They love it. Also, you got no money for Super 8.
Yeah, you can't stay. Well, in Boston, downtown Boston, it's like $200 or whatever. But still, it's like, I remember, like, couldn't even barely eat a meal because I was like, probably had like a few $100 in my account at that time. But it's the insane thing about this business where it's like the highs and the lows, you know, but
and the dream that feeds you even when you're not really eating real food.
Yes.
Like, that was it for me for such a long time.
Yes.
Where I just had the idea that one day it wasn't going to be like this, and because I had that hope and that dream,
yeah,
it was okay. It sucks now, but I just got to keep fighting.
Yes.
And without that, I don't think I could have done it.
Yeah.
Without there being a hope, I don't think I would have been able to last like I did.
Yeah.
Because my nourishment a lot of times was what possibly could be.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of that to be said about this story too.
Yeah. I like to say, like, we're kind of like negligent optimists. You know what I mean? We take foolish risks sometimes, but every once in a while, something pays off really big.
You sleep in the airport. You go home. You just wrote with Lori McKenna. You're broke, but things are happening a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever Little Big Town has your song and they say they're key, will you get any better rights just because an artist is holding a song? Or is that mostly after they cut it? Or, like, when does the reputation start a little bit where people want to get you in a room?
I feel like it starts there. You know, like, Lori, being able to see my name on a song with Lori and, like, a hold and Little Big Town's cutting it and stuff, you know, like, that all kind of really helped, I think, crack the door open for me a little bit.
When did they tell you did they send you the song before it came out on the record?
I don't think they did. I think that they posted a clip of them singing it a cappella somewhere, and that was like the first moment I was like, oh, you know, chills, just like hearing their voices on it. It was such a cool feeling, and it was just really exciting. You know, you think like everything's gonna change for you.
Yeah, I've had a few of those where I'm like, oh, this is huge, my whole life's changed. And it does it, but it's always something really small that is at the time kind of inconsequential feeling.
Yeah,
that are the big things.
Yeah,
that actually do pivot into stuff. So you have the relationship with Lori, you have the relationship with Little Big Town, but at the same time, you're working on this record that you're paying for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So you say it took a year and a half. Is that because you would save up and
get a track done? Or how was that process?
I would do like 5 songs, I think, a session. And, you know, we'd like work on that. And I didn't really have a team at this point either. So it was like me and my producer, Jake, and my publisher, Emily Schiraldi Furman, at Carnival. And it was kind of like the three of us just like holing up in the office. Like, what should we do? I don't know. Yada, yada. And, you know, we'd kind of work on the record a little bit. Frank Liddell at Carnival, he produces Miranda Lambert, or he had done a few records on her, Leanne Womack. He was kind of like grandfathering us a little bit and like coaching us through it and telling us, you know, like what he honestly was just really supportive and kind of like fed us to keep going and whatnot. Cause we had no idea what we were doing. I'd never produced a record. My producer had never produced a record. We just like were following our gut with it all, you know, and making, trying to make music that we liked, that we would want to listen to. And for me, it was the mentality of like, I've been here 10 years. Like, this may be it for me. So let's just make something that if this is the last thing I get to make here, we love it. And we can go home and like, I can tell my kids about it someday or something, you know?
Unless you fail doing what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. There have been times where I failed doing something other people have. Hey, why don't you do this? And I'm like, you know what? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bomb out. And you're like, God dang, I'd rather fail doing what I wanted to do so I didn't have all these thoughts that would last.
Yeah.
And so that was your idea of, okay, we may go down, dang it, but we're going to do something that really feels true to me and what we're doing. Because if it fails, at least we failed honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can hang your hat on that, you know? And so that's kind of what we did. And it was a year and a half of just like holing up at my engineer's studio in Germantown. And, you know, we just stay up late into the night, drink bourbon and talk about, we're just so buzzy on songs and energy and excitement and fun. You know, it was like one of the most fruitful years for me because I'd been so brokenhearted by the industry, you know? And so this was like kind of me getting a little bit of like, I tuned out so much of the town and just kind of went in and was like finding it all again. You
was
know?
There an impatience as you guys were creating the songs that would be the record and you're doing them in batches?
Uh-huh.
Was it ever like, you know what, screw it, let's just put these 5 out. Like, I just want to get something out. Or did you have to battle that, or did you really have the patience to go, we're going to finish this whole thing,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to put it out as the project is? Because my patience isn't good.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, we did it? Let's go. Let's get it out there. How was that process for you?
It's funny that you say that because I have never thought about that, but I was just like, it was a record in my mind, and it wasn't done till everything was complete. I mean, shoot, I think that I went up to write with Lori again, and I wrote what ended up being like one of the title track of the record. So we'd gone in and made that session, you know, and then I went up with her and I wrote a few more songs. So it wasn't, you know, it was a work in progress the whole way until it felt complete to us. And then we didn't have a team. So then we're like, okay, now what do we do with it? You know?
You put out other songs from that record, like a deluxe version, right?
Yeah,
right? Because you did the record and then you added songs. Was it different to do those songs that were added because the record was at least critically acclaimed?
Mm-hmm.
And depending on, I mean, I like the record and a lot of people like the record, but I don't know its reach out because I wasn't watching any of your, I'm not that psycho about you, just mildly. So was it easier to find the money to do those tracks because of the success of the original record?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm trying to like remember, I think on the deluxe is when Big Loud, I was signing my deal too. So then they were a part of that, mm-hmm. you know, so I wasn't like saving all my waitressing tips anymore. You know, it was like they were helping float me and giving me the freedom to be able to create.
Hang tight. The Bobbycast will be right back. And we're back on the Bobbycast.
Was there any part of that record that whomever signed you over at Big Loud, like I don't know which of the guys, which of the people over there were instrumental in, hey, that's awesome, let's get her. Was there a song or two that they brought up like really resonated with them? They were like, when we listen to this, this song shows us who you are. Do you remember any of that? What was
I
it?
Remember, like, Seth got super jacked on Filling My Cup. When he heard Filling My Cup, he was like, this is the sound. You know, that was like, we'd put fiddle on it. It kind of has that throwback, like, you know. And he was just like, he lit up on that song. And, yeah, it's been really cool, you know, to see the whole thing with them. And Nicole Gallion's a part of it, too, with Songs and Daughters. And she's someone I've written with for a very long time, so she knows me very well creatively. But I feel very fortunate. I think having been here for so long, I was always so like gun shy about record labels because I'd seen so many friends just get crushed. You know what
shelved
I mean?
Shelved or dropped
yeah.
or just it not working.
Yeah. yeah. So it was very important for me. One of the perks of having been around the block of this town a few times, very important for me to find someone that just like got it, you know? And I felt that Seth and Nicole and the team there, they really got it. And they've been really cool about letting me do my thing, you know?
When you play shows now, and if you when you play the single, do you hear people sing back to you?
Yeah. Is that, last night they did it.
Isn't that awesome?
It was so freaking nuts. It's so bizarre as someone who's been here for freaking ever, you know, put out multiple records, to be able to see the difference with this one song, it's just nuts.
The Bobbycast. We'll be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com.
Tecovas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for four lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with four lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
And we're back on the Bobbycast.
Number eight's a really awesome and talented duo who happen to be married. Their name is The Warren Treaty, made up of Michael Trotter Jr. and Tanya Trotter. Michael shared the story behind their name and how serving in the Army inspired him to write music. And Tanya talked about how they met and how she got started singing at a really young age. And in the episode, if you go listen to it, Michael talks about how, you know, he saw her on Sister Act. It was like, I'm going to marry her. Pretty funny. Pretty awesome. Here is The Warren Treaty from episode 399.
Whenever we talked about your name, Michael, you mentioned you wanted war because of your background.
Yeah.
Is that military service? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Why did you join the military?
Ooh, just... I had made a lot of mistakes, man, in my life. I mean, I had dropped out of high school. I was done with that. And I had made a baby, my daughter, my sweet honey. And I had another one on the way. And I was just lost. I didn't know where to go, what to do. And I just knew I believed at that time I wasn't school material. You know, I didn't know what kind of material I would be, period, coming from the streets of Cleveland. And but my grandfather, my father, my uncle all served. And I knew that I wasn't too far off from how jacked up they were. So I was like, I think I'm going to go and join the Army. And
you went to Iraq, right?
Oh, yeah.
What was that like for you?
For me, so, man, I think it was a gift and a curse. You know, the gift was, it's the first time I had any kind of relationship with someone who didn't look like me. You know, like, I tell this all the time, even when we're on stage, like, I had went through my whole life without encountering white people at all, you know, and only reading what they put in the books and what they want you to know, whether it's on TV or whether it's in the books and the history or whatever. But when I got into the Army, it's like, all right, here we go. We're doing this, you know, and then you start realizing that the color of your skin is the actual uniform and the flag. And, you know, and then you start talking and realizing there ain't much difference. And that was the gift for me, to be able to serve with those men and women, my battle buddies, you know. And the curse was, and then you lose them. You don't realize, like, hey, this isn't forever, you know. And you forget sometimes, like, you're at war, because people don't understand war. There's a lot of downtime. It's a lot of quiet. It's a lot of reflecting. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's a explosion or mortar round or IED or something like that. And then even that gave me a gift, because then I started writing songs. My first song I ever wrote was in the war, about one of my battle buddies who got killed. And I wrote it. I taught myself to play the piano and to make the song. And
they have a piano there?
Saddam. You know,
in the palace?
Yeah. This isn't a well-known or well-publicized fact about him, because it would kind of humanize a little bit this tyrant, but he was a prolific pianist. He had pianos everywhere in Iraq, and we just happened to take over one of the palaces that had his black upright piano, and little initials was carved, and I'm just singing and learning how to play, that kind of thing. And I do the song I wrote for this particular soldier's memorial out there. And it brings so much resolution to the soldiers, you know, like the stuff I was putting in it. You know, I would talk about the things I would miss and the things I would not miss, you know, like the smell of his feet, you know, just little stuff like that, just trying to lighten the moment. And my colonel at the time, shout out to Peter L. Jones, who's very familiar with your show. Wanted to know if I wrote the song. I said, yeah. And he said, well, you know what? That's what you're going to do for the remainder of your time in Iraq. You're going to go with me, learn about the fallen, and then you're going to write the song and perform it.
Wow.
And that became my job from 05 to the 07 when I would get out of the military.
What was your job before that?
Just infantry. I was in the infantry, and really, it's whatever the Army needs. You know, but my sole focus was protecting logistics, that kind of thing. And it's always a difficult part to tap into, you know.
Yeah, and I would imagine too, with that, you talk about a curse and also something wonderful, is that you're getting to do this for them and it's a wonderful thing, but you're constantly re-exposed to the hardest part of it.
Yeah. I didn't know, I because over 90% of the soldiers I was writing about, I knew, you know, so these are friends. But when you're so focused on healing and you're so focused on taking everyone else's mind off of it, you're not focusing where you're putting your mind at the moment. And it wasn't until I got out to where I realized I had a problem, you know. I had PTSD and depression and anxiety, and it took my life over. I couldn't get jobs. When I did get jobs, I'd lose the jobs because I would just freak out a little bit. 4th of July was always hell, especially in Detroit, because I don't know, their 4th of July is a little bit different than everyone else's. They got stuff that really sounds like, no, I know that's a bomb. You know, like, I don't know how Lil Rocky got that, but, you know. And this is when she first discovered there was a real problem with me. I mean, I'm I'm 6'2". I weigh about 110 pounds, you know, and trying to dive under the couches, hiding, and my children are crying, and I'm yelling commands, get down, and you know, and it's stuff that people for years have made jokes out of, shell shock, but you know, until you really go through it, you don't realize how real it truthfully is. Yeah. You know,
I've done a lot of work with veterans like yourself, and we would get them service dogs through either us specifically or work through organizations. And one of the tools that soldiers would use when they would come back home is that service dog who would always keep them as grounded as possible into what is real.
Yeah.
Because they've also got to take care of that dog.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's a big part of having a service dog is you can't just let that go. You gotta take care of it while they're also trained. So like I respect it so much.
Yeah, yeah. It's a difficult part. And even with the service dog, like there's some things that most people don't consider when they offer that up to a soldier, because it's very important, like you asked, what unit. You know, with my particular unit, our focus was defusing a lot. And most of the situations we would have to defuse, or the bombs we had to defuse, were carcasses, or, you know, a dog is running up to you. And, you know, we love dogs, right? And you don't realize there's a wire hanging out of his tail, and you're like, what's going on? And then it's too late. Oof. So, you know, even babies and carriages, strollers and stuff. So I had to really, I just shared this with my whole team and my wife not that long ago. I said, you know, I know what it was in regards to. The shooting here in Nashville, right? I had to, that situation helped me feel again in a way that I had lost that feeling, you know, because I've seen murder on a different scale. You know, and I this year I can honestly say I started feeling again. Like I could feel that pain. I could feel that loss, you know, and I think it's through the love of my wife and through treatment, you know, that I'm able to get to that point. But so many soldiers, it's just like we got to drive on, you know.
Hang tight. The Bobbycast will be right back. And we're back on the Bobbycast.
Tanya, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Washington, D.C.
Were you always in D.C.? Were you Maryland at all?
Yep, I was Maryland, a lot of PG County.
Yeah.
Bethesda, you know, Potomac, that
There's
area.
A fine line there, and yeah. I've done both. I've played the theater, like, literally in D.C. right next to the Capitol, mm-hmm. and then I've played the amphitheater. And there's like city and country, that line is real close to each other.
Very close.
And you go from one to the other, and there's no, you know exactly where you are.
Oh, yeah.
So where did you live, in the city or the country?
I kind of lived in both. I mean, PG County at the time, it wasn't as populated as it is. So we moved from Washington, D.C. My dad was a police officer, Washington, D.C. police officer for 25 years. And we ended up moving to PG County, which was very, you know, suburbs. So they would call us the suburbs girl when we went back to the city, you know, and I didn't realize it until I got older that there was a big difference. And then we would also go to New Bern, North Carolina, where my dad was from, every summer. So I mean,
that's a country right there.
That's a real country. Yeah, that's the country. That was dirt roads and hog pens in front of my grandmama's yard and all that stuff. So it was very different for me.
Did you sing as a kid?
Oh, yeah.
How young and...
I was eight.
Okay.
8 years old when I started. My mom was from Panama, so I was listening to all kinds of music. I was like, am I going to be Celia Cruz or am I going to be Patti LaBelle? You know? So it was I was just trying to make the difference. But 8 years old was when I got the bug.
Did you sing in church, or was there a stage for you? Because usually, especially the artists that come in here, church is always the first place that there's an open stage. That any, it don't matter how good you are, you can get up and make a joyful noise.
Yeah.
So did you sing in church at all?
Oh, yeah. Everywhere was a stage. I was one of those kids. So whether it was a living room, whether it was a church, I was always entering myself in talent shows from age like seven. You know,
Did you win them as a kid?
Yeah. I was very extravagant as a kid.
Were you good though?
I don't know if I was good, more if the theatrics of it all was good, you know.
If you were to be an adult now and see you at seven, not know it was you singing, would you go, that seven-year-old's got real potential to be a great singer? Or would you go, that seven-year-old has got real potential to have potential?
You know, it's interesting because I was so flamboyant and so wild. I would have said that that 7-year-old was going to make a good entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there was just no bars off when I was 7. I mean, I was free.
Is that what you wanted to be when you grew up, a singer?
No, I didn't. I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to practice entertainment law. But then I got the bug and I was like, okay, this is a way for me to kind of, you know, get into music as a lawyer, is to sing.
When did the bug change direction? Because apparently you always loved to sing, but mm-hmm. you thought you would do something else. When did it kind of consume you that, okay, I'm not going to do that. I am going to sing.
Very interesting, because I had my first record deal when I was 17. And I remember being in that and doing the music and putting out a record. I would say that the bug didn't really hit me until the war and treaty.
Really?
Yeah. It got me when I started doing with Michael, and because I left my record deal and when I was like 22, 23. Yeah. And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. The passion wasn't there. I didn't have that thing that it takes for you to go through the highs and lows with it.
Yeah, that thing that even though you're getting all the no's, you keep mm-hmm. going.
Yes, that thing. I didn't have that thing. And once I got with the Warren Treaty and we were doing like coffee house tours, and I was so happy. We would be in the coffee shops and it's like two people clapping, but the music made me so happy. And it was every genre of music that I just loved, that we were kind of, you know, a musical gumbo together. So the War and Treaty gave me that spark. And when I met Michael out on that field at Laurel's Lake in Maryland, it was him out there in this hot, I mean, it had to be 95 degrees outside. He had a big Coogee-like sweater back then. You know, those were like the sweaters. But he was killing it, and his passion for it was just something that I remember at 8 years old, climbing up in the tree in my backyard, writing little notes of my little songs back then that I had at 8 years old, but I didn't have at 17 once I got the deal. But he had it.
How'd you guys meet?
At Laurel Lakes. It was a love festival, as cheesy as it sounds.
It's so cheesy. It's so
a love
cheesy.
Festival.
I know. Yeah. It's so cheesy.
I had never been to one of those.
Well, it sounds a little, you know, but
it does sound a little, you know.
But it's not really. Maybe in 10 years we'll do
it. It was a love festival of the community. Yeah. They were giving out backpacks and they wanted singers, and mm-hmm. I was a local.
Yeah.
Local, and they were like, you should come sing your song.
Yeah, there's a festival that I would do in the city to give backpacks back to the underprivileged kids in our area, and Michael was one of the artists.
So you saw him singing.
Mm-hmm.
You were drawn to him.
Oh yeah.
Were you drawn to him like that's an energy I want to be around, or like that's an energy I want to be around?
That's both. It was both. You know, I immediately gave him my phone number, and he was there with his friend.
Do you remember her approaching you? Do you remember?
I sure do. I remember me approaching her, and she was ignoring my conversation.
He's telling so many stories.
Yeah, how about that?
So what's the real story here?
Yeah, that's my story's the real story.
That's not. It's your side, my side, then the truth.
I walked up on Tanya, and this lady named Diane introduced us, and Tanya gave me her little hand like this. And I was like, hi, I'm Michael. And she was like, I'm Tanya. And then turned right around and kept talking.
I mean,
I was like,
with his girlfriend. What am I peeped the
that's
scene.
True.
You know,
that's
I was
true.
Like, let's see what's happening. I'm not going to, you know.
Touche. However, yeah. You know, I remember her coming up to me at the end of my set. And she was like, did you write all these songs? And I said, yeah, I wrote them. And she told me about a project she and her brother were actually working on. And she wanted me to come in as a writer. And, she gave me her phone number.
Right then?
Yeah.
Just from that one?
Yep.
I want you to come in as a writer.
Straight up.
Yeah.
She gave me her number and I threw it away.
Yeah, right. You would have got it.
Yeah, I would have got it.
Yeah. He had no clue.
I threw her number away.
Really? Because, why? Because you had a girlfriend?
No.
Okay.
I read into it. I was like, eh, she didn't want me. This is a fake number. You know what I mean? Tanya's beautiful and okay. I had a lot of esteem issues and, you know, I wasn't paying attention to writing. I thought, like, yeah, this is going to be us, you know. And I threw the number away and instantly regretted it. And I'm driving my girlfriend at the time home, and it was her. She's like, you like her, don't you? And I was like, no. And yeah. And she's like, I could see y'all together. Like, I was like, I could too.
What, your girlfriend told you?
Yeah.
That she could see you with another person.
Shirley, she's a
sweetheart.
Yeah, she is. She definitely told me that. She was like, I can see y'all's energy right there, and that combo was like And I was like, really? Because I didn't think there was no energy there at all. But
it was energy.
How'd you guys find each other back then? If you don't have her number.
I found
her dad's
my dad's a police officer.
That's hilarious.
He's a private detective at the time. I was like, okay.
This is this true.
Guy.
All this is true.
I wish they had face recognition back then.
That's so funny.
Hang tight. The Bobbycast will be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or you like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Welcome back to the Bobbycast.
At number 7, it's Kix Brooks of Brooks and Dunn from episode 409. Kix is just a really funny guy, and sometimes it's hard to tell if he's being serious or if he's just messing with me. You know, Kix talks about getting discovered at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, and the first song he wrote that to him was super special. If you haven't listened to the full episode, I highly recommend you go and you listen. Here is Kix Brooks at number 7, but back on episode 409.
I mentioned Johnny Cash and like Brooks Robinson. I played third base for the Orioles way before me, but he was from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Did you have a Louisiana people like that to you that you were like, they're from where we're from?
Sure.
I really like, I admire what they're doing. Who would that be?
Well, obviously, the, you know, Hank Williams and Johnny Horton and Merle Kilgore. You familiar with him? Mm-hmm. So Merle was Hank Jr.'s manager and also wrote Wolverton Mountain. And I was just, you've
surely. He was a writer and he managed?
Yeah, Hank managed Jr. Hank Jr. But famous. And I met him through the CMA board the first time and we got to be great friends. But yeah, he was famous for, you know, he had big rings on all his fingers. You know, this jeweler, Diamond Dan, you know, made it really, really outgoing, you know, over the top, really fun guy. But you say, Merle, you doing good, man? Everything okay? And he go, are you shitting me? Show you those rings. Yeah.
What was this? I mean, when you mentioned a guy like that, I think about Nashville when it used to kind of be like that.
Oh, yeah.
Loud. And it's still its own way of loud, but like loud. You would just see somebody and know that they
did something. We've lost a lot of our carny factor. That's
carny.
For
that's
sure.
Yeah, it's definitely. Yeah. What was it like when you moved? What was this town like when you moved here?
I'll tell you the. For me, it was, I just wanted to be a songwriter in this town. That's really, I mean, most all songwriters have some dreams and, you know, they play their songs. We've gotten some recognition. There's exceptions to that. But most songwriters like to think of themselves as artists. I mean, I did, and I had a couple of record deals before Ronnie and I got together, but not because I was that great. I don't know. But I started singing a lot of demos, you know, for stuff like that. But the town, the ability to – my first publisher was a guy named Don Gant. And, man, he would hold court every day. We'd write songs all day. But he had been at Tree Publishing and was responsible for some of the great careers from Roger Miller and Mickey Newberry, got Sonny Throckmorton, people you may not be familiar with, but people that – Harlan Howard, of course. They were all at Tree – I mean, they owned independent publishing, but there were still great publishing companies like Combine, where Christofferson and, you know, Waylon and all those guys were a little smaller company. But when we were done at the end of the day, people would start piling in that door, and Don would always send out for a few cases of beer. We'd just pack in his office and start passing the guitar around. It would really make you want to write something special, because if that guitar came your way, or Don said, did you write anything today? But at the same time, even if I'd written something that wasn't that good, he would find that one line in a song and go, man, wait a second. Second verse. What was it you said? He goes, did y'all hear that? It's like, and all of a sudden he would make you feel like, he might not tell you it was a great song because it wasn't, but he would also make sure you knew that's what you need to be. That's a great line. Give me a whole song full of that kind of stuff, you know. It's a great teacher, but also by the end of the night, we're all well-oiled. Then, you know, Mickey Newberry or Ray Van Hoy or some of those guys at Throckmorton who are just writing this brilliance, they get the guitar, and then you got the opportunity. But man, it was all up and down the street, and where's it happening kind of thing. And I don't, you know, there's so much you know, I don't sound like an old guy, but there's so much concrete where there were little houses all the way down Music Row, and you just wander up and down. You could hear it a lot of times up and down.
People just doing the thing.
Yeah,
playing,
you know,
or singing,
it's going,
or
and riding. Somebody come running down to your publishing company and go, man, come on down to Combine. You know, Waylon's down there and they're singing, you know, and da da da, that kind of stuff is going on.
Do you remember when you moved here, like, and again, you're in the majors now because you have all the great songwriters around you, which elevates at least, hopefully, you to get to their level. Do you remember the first like song you wrote where you were like, man, this is special. Like, I have now reached a new peak. I've learned and I've written this song. Do you remember the first great song you feel like you wrote?
Honestly, I had quite a few number ones at that point, but I think Red Dirt Road was a time when I really put the period on that song and went, this is a freaking hit. And it's really saying, it's, you know, Ronnie and I did that together. And he actually, it was just a place where we talked about, really got real with each other, talked about where we came from. Like, you know, he was telling me about El Dorado. I was telling him about where my grandparents was. That's where he is. And somehow I was telling him about driving those roads with my grandfather, looking at timber, you know, what he was going to cut. And I said, man, that dirt was just so, he goes, I know it was up. I said, that'd be a good name for an album. So now we got to write a song. and we kind of puttered around at it three or four times and never really got more than a line or two. And he got off the plane. We had a gig in Sacramento and we flew to San Francisco and got off the plane and he handed me a cocktail napkin and it had those lines about, you know, drank my first beer and, you know, wrecked my first car, tore it all to pieces, something about Jesus and, you know, life ain't just for high achievers. And I went, he said, what do you think? I said, I think it's freaking great, man. This is exactly what we were talking about. And I jumped on a bus and, you know, wrote pretty much the music and the verses. He had already told me about Rural Route 3. You know, that's kind of when we kicked around. It's where he came from. And he came and knocked on my bus, had Terry McBride, and said, man, let's go get a steak. And I said, you got to hear this song, though. And we both just kind of slapped it up in here, and I couldn't wait to record it. It was really fun to put it down too.
Did you ever write a song and go, this one's special? Then you recorded it and you're like, I think it's lost what we were trying to do, so let's do it again? Or
I think more just sometimes when you write songs for a living and songs get recorded, you know, Don Gant had a plaque on his desk that said, it's not as good as the demo.
Like demo-itis, but a lot of my friends, yeah. It's like, you know, yeah. It's, you ever hear, yeah, it would just be tough if like you feel it and then you, even like comedy songs, like if I play them live and we try to record them, I'm always like, it doesn't sound as good when I recorded it. Like, it, and it probably does, probably sounds better.
Yeah.
But because it's like live, or like if I'm creating something on the spot, it just feels newer and fresher.
You're married to the thing. And I would never mention what song or that was, you know, or whatever, because it's, I mean, it's the greatest honor of all for somebody to risk their career on something you made up, you know, as a songwriter, you know, but it is demo-itis. You just get used to hearing it one way so many times. I remember like Modern Day Romance. I wrote that with a Dan Tyler, only song we ever wrote together. And he wrote Bobby Sue on the Oak Ridge Boys album. And I had a cut that I'd written on there and that was actually my first cut, called Old Kentucky Song.
Ever.
Yeah. And which was pretty lucky to be on a million selling album, because
you could still make money.
Even your songwriter royalties, you know, all of a sudden Don started paying me $100 a week and I'm a professional songwriter. You know, that's really, really where it went from. But man, I really believed in Modern Day Romance. I said, man, this song is cool. It's got a good vibe to it. And everybody seemed to like it, but nobody would cut it, you know. And finally, Gant said, look, I'll cut it on you. Said, and he produced Buffett's first five records. You know, he did Come Monday, did all the backgrounds. He was a great producer. And I said, wow, that'd be cool. He said, we'll get you a record deal. So let's do it. He said, you sing it great and da, da, da. So we did. We cut it. Actually got a film company interested. Cut a demo on it. I mean, a video on it. And was about to put it out as an independent thing. And Worley called and said, hey, man, Dirt Band just cut this song. He said, it's a freaking hit. Okay, I'll throw mine in the trash because I'm a huge Dirt Band fan. And Jeff Hanna sang the heck out of it. And anyway, it was, you know, sometimes things work out with songs, but you never know. Yeah.
Where did Kicks come from?
It was a couple of weeks before I was born was what I was heard. I was trying to bust out of there, you know. I don't know about you, but 9 months was long enough.
I was trying to stay in. I was trying to hang. I knew a good place when I had it. I was the opposite.
I don't know. Fetal position wasn't really my thing. I wanted to stretch out.
With my, because I, you know, Bones is not, my real name is not Bones. It's Estel. So Kicks, nickname as a kid or nickname later?
No, I was always Kicks.
Always? From a young kid?
From the time I was born, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But not your birth certificate?
No. Eric, I'm the third. My son's the fourth.
Is he Kicks? You call him Kicks as well, though? Is he Kicks Jr.?
No, call him Quattro.
Why do they call, but they really call you Kicks? Did you kick?
Not really. Call him Eric. Yes, they've always called me Kicks.
Because you kicked in the womb, because you came out a baby. It's because you kicked. You mess so much. I don't know if you're kidding or not.
No, that's the truth.
But you do understand you mess so much that sometimes it's hard for, like, that's why I'm looking at you like, okay. So Kicks came from, you were always Kicks.
That's correct.
Okay. So
if you can find any defiance of that, Bobby.
Okay.
I'll give you full credit on your.
I have no defiance. I just.
Because I've removed all of that. So you won't. You won't find it.
Hang tight. The Bobbycast will be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
And we're back on the Bobbycast.
The episode that made it to number 6 was an open and honest conversation on a topic that's not easy to talk about, even though it was in the public eye, and that topic is divorce. Number 6 for me is Michael Ray. This is from episode 407. It got a ton of streams. And even for me, it was one of the first times that I felt like I really got to know Michael Ray better. I asked him what he would have done differently. He was open about that. His last marriage. And he explains why he and his ex hadn't spoken in over 3 years. We got to hear his side of the story and why he chose not to release any songs about it, even though that wasn't happening on the other side of things. Here he is, Michael Ray.
What would you do differently if you could go back? Because I feel like a little bit, this is... I don't know you that well. You and I have spent a couple minutes. I don't know your ex at all. So I know nothing. What would you have done differently with that whole relationship? Would you have slowed it down a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I think too, if I'm being honest, I think being really the only true thing I ever knew about love or marriage was my grandparents or my aunt and uncle. My aunt and uncle, my dad's brother, him and my aunt Kim, they met when they were 15 and 14 and that was it. For the rest of their life, you know, until my uncle passed away. And so those were the only two things. And I always went, man, I want that. Or I'd go to my friend's house, you know, and I'd see them and their family or whatever. And there was none of the, at least the, obviously when you're over there, they're not showing you what's really happening. But I think, you know, I can't speak for her, but I think for me, it was like, man, look at all this going right. I think she was, you know, I also, we weren't around each other a lot. And we're both
touring artists.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And so you got the one day and that you're trying to cram it in to see each other and do what, you know, and then you're packing and, you know, you're out again. And so I probably would have slowed things down. I wouldn't have been so influenced by, I think, the people, you know, fans being involved in it. And yeah, you know, to be honest, I think I knew in the beginning, you know, or around that time that this was something we probably should have slowed down.
If I could go back, I would not have exposed my wife to the public as early as I did.
Mm-hmm.
And we still waited a while. But I was like, you know, I live my life very openly. She never really had an interest in being exposed.
Right.
Exposed is a weird word, but just like, you know, really just exposing people because it really made it hard for, I mean, really hard for her because she, that's not her favorite thing is to be public. She's not trying to be an influencer. That's not her life. She's very family oriented, not trying to be famous. But what I did by doing it earlier, I think it came on so hard and strong for her. It was a negative. And she was like, I don't like this very much. And I already didn't love it. So I'm just going to kind of take another half step back where I wish I would have just waited a little longer in that. what was that conversation like for you guys? Like, okay, are we going to do this? Because I would also think if I were you guys, I'd be loving the attention because two together.
Oh, dude. I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be the greatest thing ever.
It's cool as shit. You know, and you want, you know, and you see Tim and Faith and, yeah, you know, Garth and Trisha and, you know, we were both coming up kind of at the same time, her and I. So it was like, it wasn't like one was over here and the other one was, you know, first starting out. It was like, we're kind of right there at each other. So it was a lot to celebrate, but, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's yeah, I'm not gonna lie, dude. There's a lot of perks come with it.
It would,
you know,
have camouflaged some of the toughness, honestly. Like all 100%, the great, like, man. Look at these two. I don't even want to say names. I'm not gonna bring her name up because it's not. But it's like, look at these two together. Because sometimes when you put two together, it's bigger than the.
Absolutely, man.
Than the two individually.
Yeah, and one thing too, we didn't do counseling. We didn't do any of that beforehand. And I think that, and there was moments that I look back now and I'm like, why didn't I speak up on that? Like, that was one of the first times that I realized her and I are opposite, you know, and I'm a very much more extroverted, you know, person, and she's not. And so there was a lot of different things. I come from a big family that, you know, my cousins had keys to my dad's house. You know, we used to just go, we'd go and we wouldn't have food at the house and we'd go just go to my uncle's house and we'd be in there cooking. They weren't even home, you know, like it was just that, you know, so there were little things that I think if we would have done that, I think we would have seen that, oh, this isn't, when you do have the two at the same time and it's in the same business and it's, and all the eyes are on you, it's very easy to keep that, hey, everything's good. Even when you're home, you know, and you're really not, going, you're really not addressing issues. You're not really knowing each other, honestly. It's just like, hey, we're here for 24 hours and I kind of got to do this meeting. I do this meeting. You want to do dinner at 5? Cool. You know, and I don't think we really just realized that, man, this is, we're opposite.
At what point on the internet did you go, I can't read this, I can't look at this stuff anymore? Because one, it's either not fair, not true, or it's just overwhelming for me to see.
Yeah. I stopped for a while. I went dark for a little bit. Just because there was so much that isn't true and there's so much that was twisted, and it was just like out of nowhere, everybody was just like, oh, look what he did. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, first off, none of y'all were around, you know, for 3 years, right, and you don't know anything that happened. You just know what this headline and what she has said. And because I don't believe in throwing shade at her or any of that stuff, we were both learning and growing up, and I'm not trying to ruin what she's trying to go into. If she wants to, you know what I mean, she gets another relationship, I don't want to ruin any of that. I hope she has the best success and does everything that she wants. I'm not trying to make this you know, beef between us two. Like, listen, both of us dropped the ball in a lot of ways, and that's the truth, you know. And so I didn't show up after, you know, the wedding day, because by that point in time, there was a lot of stuff that she didn't show up for. And it was just kind of like, and there's stuff that happened that day where I was like, I'm done. I'm out, you know? And again, I never went to therapy. I never did any of this stuff. So it was just, I had all this stuff built up. And then I think the fear of, am I repeating this process? What did I do? What if I, you know? And so all of that kind of just, it was a lot, man. It really took its toll. And I think just, we just didn't, we showed up at two different times, and then it, then to kind of go back to what you were asking about the comments, I had to bite my tongue a lot, man, because I was
your,
like,
restraint,
yeah,
top notch. Just having a restraint, period. Even if every comment was right or wrong, I would have just been in the mix.
Yeah,
it would have been completely unhealthy, and for me, and I'd have been in it, mm-hmm, and I'd have made myself worse. But you didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. You didn't put a song out. Mm-hmm. You didn't get in the comments. I mean, I don't know how you did it, if you had good people in your ear.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think a lot, my management team, who was helping me a lot during that time. Also, man, I just realized too, I went home. I went to Eustis, Florida, and stayed at my uncle and aunt's house, and they're downstairs, and hung with family. And it was at that COVID time where no one was working. We weren't touring. It was Florida, so it was open. You know, Florida didn't get, we were doing
Florida, never got COVID.
Florida never got COVID. Yeah, it stopped at the Georgia line. Yeah. So, dude, I think I just got retouched with your roots, man. Because, you know, I mean, like you were saying, we're all over the place all the time, and it's very easy to get disconnected. And I think I was, during that that was when I started seeing some of that anger start popping up. And then I went from, oh, you want to say that? Okay. Well, now the Trailer Park Eustis, Florida kid comes out, you know, and I'm like, I'm ready to fight. And I'm like, what are you saying? You don't know anything about this. And so I was like, I need to go home. chill with my mom, you know, hunt with my buddies, fish with my cousin, just do stuff that we did and just reconnect and push that all away and not even look at it.
It'd have been hard to even listen to the radio, though, because you're on and all of a sudden you hear a song about you and you're like, mother.
Oh, yeah. I just embraced that. I just turned it up.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, I was like, screw it, man. Let's go.
Let's take a quick pause for a message from our sponsor. This is the Bobbycast.
Did you write songs that you'd never put out?
Yeah, yeah, there's a couple. I wrote one with my buddy John Satterfield and John Stone that we might put out at some point, but it's not. It was mainly just, honestly, I don't think I actually will. Because we were on my bus one day and they came out to write, and I was just like, man, because everybody kept asking, are you going to write a song? You know, just, I was like, no.
Because everybody felt like they would have back. I mean, 100%. Honestly, we're all like,
yeah,
wow, like, it's going hard on him.
Yeah.
True, not true. We don't know. I don't know your relationship.
Right.
I don't know what happened, but it's like, God dang, there's like six songs in her. Every song's about you. Like, how's he not responding?
Yeah. And that was, you know, I mean, I think she could have gone a different way of that. And I think it was, you know, also, I don't think people realize we grew up in broken homes. We know people from our hometown. Sadly, in small towns, broken homes is more common than ever now. I know how hard a divorce can be. I've seen it. Seen it with my parents. I've seen it with buddies of mine. I got a friend of mine with four kids. He's hundreds of thousands of dollars and still fighting. You know, and there it's hell. We didn't own anything together. We both signed prenups. I haven't seen or spoken to her in 3.5 years. I went my way. She went hers. Divorce papers sent to my manager's office. I signed them. Got sent to her business manager's office. She signed them. That was it.
That's clean.
That was clean.
It's clean.
There's not this like, and I'm not downplaying anything. I'm not downplaying heartbreak, what anybody goes through or any of that. But when you look at what my problem was, why are we trying to make a financial gain on something that is not what is being portrayed? You know, when I see friends of mine that have gone through hell and back, you know, on both sides of the fence, man,
the process of a divorce,
the process, yeah. Dude, the fighting back and forth. I'm like, you know, yes, ours was public. Yes, there is some answers to fans. Like you said, they feel like they need it. And hey, we let them in. So you got to, you know, but on the whole thing, I was like, man, this isn't what people think it was, you know, and it was as clean as it could be. It was a breakup with paperwork. I hate that it happened. No one gets married to get divorced. It's something that haunted me for years. You know, again, made me mad at myself, made me, you know, you played things through where I did look back and go, maybe I should have done that different. You know, and I think you have no other choice in those situations to look in the mirror and go, okay, what did I do out of this? How can I stop what I did? What I contributed to this, how do I not bring this into the next? And, which is how, what helped me get through all of it, you know, but that was the part that really just kind of stuck to me a lot, was like, man, I don't think people realize like this wasn't this like gruesome battle. It was trying to be forced to be something way bigger than it was, you know? And I think too, that's why I didn't want to add any flame to the fire.
Yeah.
And that was part one of the top 10 Bobbycast of 2023. We'll be back next week with the remaining five and then a few honorable mention Bobbycasts in case you want to go listen to the full episodes in the meantime. Some of my favorites of the year that didn't make the list, though, if you want to go back and just search for them, for King of Country, awesome. Dallas Smith and his story of being in a rock band that blew up and he's a massive country artist in Canada. Richard Marx from the 80s. Go search the Bobbycast to listen to those. Find them. Have a good week. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to a Bobbycast production.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.